This is MFG Out Loud. Courageous conversations about sales and marketing for today's manufacturers. With your hosts, Ray Zaganto and Allison DeFore.
Hey, Trailblazers, welcome back to the 21st episode of MFG Out Loud. We are so thrilled to have you here. Today, we are going to have a courageous conversation about leadership through the lens of execution. And I know you're thinking that you probably know where this is going to head. I got a surprise for you. You're about to learn something here. So stick around. Our special guest today is Mr. Monty Peterson. And Monty and I have connected on LinkedIn, is where we first met. And his comments and content wound up in my feed. And having been a practitioner and a student of leadership and management and all of those fun things, I saw these comments and this content. I'm like, who is this guy? And I would write back and he would write to me, and just had some of the most engaging conversations virtually. A couple months ago, I thought, I got to talk to this guy. And then after I did, I said, Allison, we need to have him on the show. So we are so thrilled to welcome Monty Peterson, who is the principal with the CDA Group, which is a unique leadership training firm. Specializes in strategy execution management, a completely operations-based system and process that helps leaders achieve their strategic initiatives and get better every year. Now, that sounds impressive, and it's very well crafted. Let me tell you why that matters, and I get these from Monty. Less than 15% of all organizations have any sort of a system or process that helps them execute better. Now get this, over 70% of CEOs and owners attribute their failure to achieve key strategic initiatives on a lack of execution. So this matters. It's getting results matters. As I mentioned, Monty and I have gone back and forth on a lot of times on LinkedIn and had the privilege of some awesome Zoom conversations. Monty's insights and recommendations are going to be refreshing, they're actionable, and they're effective. So with that said, what a privilege it is to have you with us today. Monty, welcome to MFG Out Loud.
Well, thank you, Ray, and thank you, Allison. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And I don't think I've ever shared this with you, but you know, the main reason why I connected with you on LinkedIn was the unicorn tag. And I'm like, I've never met a unicorn. And then when I got connected to MFG Out Loud and I saw your website and I saw Allison wearing the spiritual gangster t-shirt, I'm like going, okay, this has got to be good. When would I ever get to be in the same room with a spiritual gangster and a unicorn? So,
and here you are.
Yeah, very excited.
Oh, that's awesome. So glad you're here. So why don't we jump right into the courageous conversation? Your business, your firm today, you've got a really interesting origin story. What brought you to this? Because if you just looked at, hey, well, here's your past experience, you kind of took an interesting twist, but it does make sense. What got you here today and so interested in leadership through the lens of execution?
Well, it kind of comes down to two things and two key events. And the first was my nearly 38 year career in the corporate world, in the contract, you know, services management world. I left all of that in 2016, and it just didn't really end well. Not from, you know, how I exited, but more from, you know, just my experience. I had such a good experience over my career. And then the last 4 or 5 years, you know, things were just really difficult, and it seemed like, you know, there was just a big void there when I left. And so in thinking back on it and what happened, what transpired, a lot of it was just related to, you know, how people got treated and leadership decisions that were made and how we managed. And so really the genesis of the CDA Group can be directly attributed to my wanting to, you know, go back and work with organizations and help, you know, improve the lives of leaders and managers and employees and, you know, get them, you know, get them to a stable place where they can have a good working life and a functional working life and enjoy some success. I mean, we spend a heck of a lot of time at work, and I spent, you know, I hate to think about the number of hours I spent in that nearly 38 years. And what do you get out of that? And so the CDA group was really formed to, you know, to help build that.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, follow up and then I'll grab the next event here.
No, I was just, it just occurred to me, because if you've been in the workforce long enough, you accumulate those moments where it's like, I wonder how they came to that decision, or do they realize the decision that's coming down, how it's rippling, you know, through the organization. So I can totally understand that, having that perspective.
Yeah, there's some huge disconnects there. And it just, to me, there was just a lot of egregious error, and some of it I understand, a lot of it I didn't. But and anyway, that's neither here nor there. It's, you know, it got me to this place and got me energized enough to to seek a second career and to do this. So the second event that was really big, and this actually happened while I was in my career. You know, one of my accounts was a major Midwestern university, and I had gained this account through, again, another reorganization. And I walked into it, and I found out that the team there was using an execution management system, and I had no idea, you know, what that was. And so my predecessor said, okay, you know, Chris and his team, the team on site, they're using this system. I think it's kind of neat, but I'll let you pass judgment on what you think about it. But I would definitely recommend you at least take a look at it. And so I jumped into it. I got immersed in it. And so I basically spent 3.5 years working with the execution management system that I now take to market, you know, for people. And, you know, the interesting thing about that particular account and how I received it was, the individual who built the system, Wayne Nelson is his name, and I guess I can share the name of the system. It's called KeenLink, but Wayne owns a company called Keen Insight, and Wayne was a business consultant in the manufacturing aerospace industry in Southern California back in the 90s. And he had a client who came to him and said, my people are totally disconnected from what I'm trying to do. He said, they're lost. I need something that, you know, brings them into line with what I'm doing, and so they can understand how to contribute. So Wayne went home that night. It was like a Thursday night, and his wife was, I can't remember if she was an organizational psychologist or if she's studying to be that at the time, but he said, you know, honey, guess what I did? I committed to Randy that we're going to create a system for him that can link his people, you know, to his strategy. And I don't think, you know, she had too many kind words to say to him that night. But they sat down, and over the course of a weekend, they built a paper-based system that essentially did that aligned the daily tasks and activities of everybody on Randy's team with the strategic objectives of the organization. And they took it to him, and he liked it, and they implemented it. And at that point, it changed, you know, Wayne and Keen Insight's trajectory in the business. So, you know, that was roughly right around 2000.
Wow.
So for the last, you know, 20 years, you know, Wayne has just focused on management execution. And so the connection back to my client, the major Midwestern university, was that I had a resident district manager who ran that particular operation. His wife worked for Wayne Nelson. And so Wayne had basically, you know, went to Chris, her husband, and gave him the keys of the castle, showed him the system, and started working with him, you know, on it. And so that's kind of how I fell into it. And, you know, I've been going strong now with it for 4 years. But the amazing thing was when I started doing it, and the more and more I got engaged with it and how the positive results that I saw it happening through it, just made me say, once I'm done, or if I ever do leave this, you know, this industry, this is something that I could see myself doing, you know, very easily.
That's awesome. And for the record, I believe that Midwestern University happens to be a place where Allison and her family are making a significant annual contribution right now, if I'm not mistaken. Indiana, right?
Yeah, it's Indiana University. you invested like a lot of us on high end.
That small piece of asphalt in one of the parking lots at this point.
Yeah, well, trust me, they don't turn that down. You know, whatever small piece you want to pay for, they'll take it.
That's awesome.
One thing that caught my attention about the work that you're doing is you talking about EQ, or emotional intelligence. And I have been, my firm felt, that's been the cornerstone of how we help manufacturers go to market for the last 9-10 years. And so then to hear somebody who's in, you know, talking about management execution and leadership, talking about EQ, my antennas went up. And then to see all the thought leadership just pouring out of you, I thought, I'm with Ray. I thought, oh yeah, this is somebody that we have to know and share with our tribe, because maybe you could share a little bit with our listeners about EQ and why that's so important to your process.
Yeah. And if I could just put the cart before the horse a little bit. I look at strategy execution management as a framework. If I were to position it metaphorically, I would say that management execution is the scaffolding that holds up the business, right? And execution management, when you execute well, you've got control of the business. I mean, you know what's happening top to bottom inside your organization. And so really what that gives you, not only in delivering good business results, but it gives you time. And so, you know, why I go to market and why I espouse as being the framework that, you know, leaders can use to build emotionally intelligent organizations is that when they get to that point where they're able to deliver at a level that they're comfortable with and they're happy with, we've got the time to develop leadership. We've got the time to teach social emotional learning, because I think those are obviously two of the most valuable attributes that, you know, any organization, you know, can, yep, you know, can offer beyond the impact that they have on business, right? The, you know, the ability to make collaboration work better, getting people to build trust and respect between each other and understand, you know, what other people are thinking. It's that you know, self-awareness and you know, the awareness of others, I think, from an emotional intelligence standpoint, Allison, that you're talking about, that's so critical, you know, in business. We have these emotions and, you know, these feelings, but, you know, we're never prompted to understand them and why we're doing that. But if you can teach people to, you know, recognize them, understand them, label them, regulate them, you know, you're going to have a much better equipped workforce and a much happier workforce, because people are going to achieve an understanding that they're just not getting right now. In most organizations, we're still playing by society's rules in a lot of different ways. And that's, I just sort of see that as a bad thing.
Well, don't you?
I'm sorry, Allison. Go ahead.
Just real quick, don't you think that by teaching people, right, giving them the skills, it's the difference between, yeah, I hear empathy thrown around a lot these days, but it's the difference between knowing what empathy is and practicing being empathetic on a daily basis to the point where it just becomes natural how you connect with people, how you relate to them.
Yeah, that's right. One of the greatest things that you can do as a leadership team is show your vulnerability to your people. I mean, nothing builds trust and respect faster than that. And so when people learn to be vulnerable and they understand that they can be vulnerable at work, just like they're, you know, they are at home or school or wherever, that gets people excited. I mean, it gets people moving. They feel like they understand you, that you care for them, that, you know, and you, we all know what happens, right? When we know what you know, people that care, we work 10 times harder for them, right?
Yep.
And so you're going to see some, you know, amazing results from just, even if you get a quarter mile down the road on social emotional learning, there are going to be people that benefit. And again, it just sort of builds upon itself. If you get that far in, chances are the people on the leadership team are going to carry it further because it's just having that much of an impact on your business.
It's interesting that the framework that you talk about, I mean, it's manifesting itself in the conversation. What really resonated with me was the notion of within the framework, as you start to do things better, you create time. And that time in some ways creates a vacuum. Now you can use it for good or evil. For good, and you posted, I think, about this today, your people in an organization have to have the time to work on tasks as well as continuous improvement things, whether those are, you know, individual or those are departmental or whatever. Perhaps in a broader sense, give them time to think. And I can see in that framework where if you free up all this time, the first thing or a temptation for leadership would be, well, we've created all this time, fill it up. And you kind of lose, well, if you use it a little differently, instead of thinking task, think a little more strategically about it, you may be getting a much different result down the road. That makes sense?
Yeah. Because right, we're already filling up our time, our dance card at work. You know, we are, and we're doing it with our daily responsibilities, right? And the daily fires that kind of happen with it. And a lot of times that just becomes an excuse for not improving the organization. You know, it's all I can do to, you know, do my job, to do this. I can't, you know, so if you can get that under control and teach people how to manage it effectively, all of a sudden you get them focusing on the improvement activities and then all of a sudden, you know, you're doing things better and you're working, you know, across functional areas much, much more effectively and great things are starting to happen. So, you know, you just need to understand that improvement activities are the only things that are going to make your organization better. You can kind of dabble along and stumble along and, you know, achieve the same results. But if you can drive the improvement side of things, then, you know, the sky's the limit in terms of what you can accomplish as an organization.
Well, and you shared a post today, and I actually printed it out because I loved it so much today on LinkedIn. So everybody follow Monty on LinkedIn, first of all. And secondly, look at his post from July 23rd. And this ties in exactly with what you just said. And I almost fell out of my chair when I read this statistic. 85% of leadership teams spend less than 1 hour per month discussing strategy. Less than 1 hour per month. So if you add that up, they're spending a day and a half total talking about strategy. And I have found that to be true with my clients as well. I would love it if you would maybe chime in here, because what you were just saying right before I said this was, you know, using that extra time for improvement. So how do you think, I guess my question really is, does your model help them structure their time better so that 85% would shrink considerably to a much smaller number?
Yes. The time structuring happens, you know, with the priorities. When you assemble around execution management, you're settling annually on a set of strategic initiatives, and those drive everything that you do. they're the priority, and you cascade that through the organization, and you drive it down so that, you know, everybody else knows, you know, how they can contribute as well. But I think with respect to leadership and why it's so limited, the time they spend on it, is because there's sort of this this recognized passivity that execution is inherent in what we already do. Right. And they don't recognize it as a separate discipline that's needed, you know, that's what it's going to take in order to, you know, move to the next level or to elevate your organization or to really, you know, hit your aspirations. And so people say to me, you know, well, we already do execute, and, you know, and they're right. Some people do it pretty well. Most of what I see in the marketplace are, you know, legacy businesses or family owned businesses that have been, you know, raised from the bottom up. You know, those organizations tend to stick together and have consistent leadership, and they figure it out. But there's a lot of people with transplanted leadership and, you know, a lot of reorganization. I mean, leaders tend to just treat the symptoms of execution when they run into a problem, right? They'll do a restructuring, or they'll bring in people like us to do trainings, and they'll attack the cultural aspects separately. They'll do all these things, but really sit down and say, okay, we just need to be more strategic in our thinking and in our planning and how we do these things. And, you know, the way I look at it, Allison, if a leader only has an hour a month to spend on that, then they don't have enough time to do their job.
I agree. And I don't mean to hog the questions, Ray. I have one more.
Go for it.
Regarding that too, you had mentioned in this post that a quarter of typical company employees have access to the strategic plan. And I too have seen the same thing with just about every company I've worked with. I know Ray and I have talked about it numerous times. Why do you think that leadership doesn't share the strategic plan with everybody so that everybody is on board?
I think they really lack the understanding of how to translate it effectively throughout the organization. So what they have a tendency to do is call a big town hall meeting, bring everybody in, you know, get everybody fired up, explain what they're going to do. And, you know, basically the audience reaction is, you know, fine, you know, let me know when we get there, I'm going back to work.
Yeah.
You know? And so there's just this huge disconnect. They probably are trusting their functional area leadership to take it from there and to roll it out and to make sure that it happens. And generally what happens is those people are they're not different than anybody else in the organization. They have responsibilities and day-to-day jobs that are critical, and, you know, to think through how it's going to affect their people and how they're going to make it happen. It's just not putting the pre-thought into it. And, you know, the real irony that drives this home is Harvard Business Review did a study. It's probably been 10 years or more, but, you know, they asked CEOs and senior leaders, what's the single most important leadership attribute that you have to have? And, you know, far and above, like, it was like 97% of them responded that it was strategic thinking. And then in another survey, you know, same thing, 10,000, you know, senior leader CEOs, they asked, you know, well, if strategic thinking is the most, you know, important attribute, you know, do you do that? And the overwhelming response was, no, I don't have time. The irony of that statement alone just tells you there's a lot of confusion around, you know, strategy and strategy execution. How do we get this out to, you know, to the people? Because in reality, you know, individuals execute, you know, organizations, you can make the case they do certain things on their own together, but it's really the culmination of all the efforts of, you know, the people on your team 24/7, 365 that makes the difference. And I, you know, there's a huge flyby there. So
it's unfortunate.
We're getting close to the end, so I'm going to ask Ray too. I know he's got more questions. So
this could be a mini series, but I guess a good chance to kind of circle all the way back, because I think we're in enthusiastic agreement that the strategic planning and connection and or absence of connection to execution is hurting, certainly holding back a lot of businesses. And what I thought was, you know, one of the things you commented on earlier in the episode and that you and I have talked about before is that there is a process. It's not just a matter of coming in and putting the executives in the conference room and go, there's a better way, I will show you how. There really is, one of the things you bring is a structure and a framework that they can follow that helps on the strategic planning all the way through the execution side of things. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like all good things, it starts at the top.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in working with leaders, before I even contract or start working with an organization, I really need to kind of feel the leadership out. And so we sit down and we do what I call an executive pilot, which is basically 4 to 5 weeks. Probably takes, you know, 10 to 15 hours of the CEO's time outside of work to complete that process. But really what I'm doing in that process, I'm doing two things. One, I'm testing the CEO and the leadership to see if really they're cut out for this, that they're really going to be committed. And the second thing I'm doing is I'm setting the foundation in place for how we're going to move forward. We're doing all the pre-work around, you know, the core behaviors, the strategic initiatives. We're setting up, you know, we're going over the mission, the vision. We're making sure that that's going to align with, you know, what they want to actually achieve. So we put them through a lot of paces, and that's a little bit of work. And you know, but if you're willing to do that and you're willing to commit to that, then the rest of the process is really me coming on board and just culturally embedding this into your people's daily pattern of management. And I can't describe it any more simply than that. But if we can get through that first part and get the leadership all aligned, then, you know, rolling this out through the organization, you know, it can happen, and you can just watch it and you can continue to focus on the business and not feel like, you know, you own that process.
That's awesome. I admire that. There's a process there that has enough degrees of freedom to be tailored to the culture and the people that are there. I think Allison and I have seen this time and again. Having that third party perspective is so critical, and being able to guide them through the change, because this is as much a change management exercise as well. You got to be there with them, get the plate spinning, and let them take it over themselves. I think that's a solid approach.
Yeah, I mean, truth be told, they supply all the rocket sauce.
Yeah.
And I just kind of shake it out of the bottle and, you know, get it out there, and then we, you know, we put it all together, and then we, you know, we continue to learn. And again, I don't want to mislead anybody by thinking that, you know, we come in and then in a month or two, you know, you're executing well. Sometimes it takes a little while, and obviously if your organization's bigger, you know, it's going to take a little bit longer. But, you know, the thing that I really like is that, you know, you'll go into an operation and 6, 12, 18 months later, the people will look back and say, we don't know how we ever did it before, because now, you know, we've got all this clarity around what we're trying to accomplish, and we're all planned out. We know, you know, we know what we do every day and why we do it. And that's you know, that's one of the biggest compliments that people can, you know, can pay me and the system that I use, is, you know, that it's working, it's making things better for us, and we're a better company or organization as a result.
And that's what we wanted to share with our listeners today, that there's a path forward. It can be better, right? And Monty's a resource to tap into to learn more about that. So Monty, we're so thrilled to have you here today. No kidding. This could be a mini series. I'm sure we're gonna come back to you at some point in the time, at point in the future. And if you're kind enough and available, we would love to continue the conversation.
Yeah, well, I've picked up your podcast and I listened to it and I'm going to continue to listen to it. So if episode 42 avails itself for a repeat appearance, I would certainly be, you know, be honored and grateful to be able to do that.
Well, that's awesome. Monty Peterson with the CDA Group. We're going to have show notes and all kinds of awesome things for you to be able to get in touch with Monty, be able to reference some of his awesome content. Find him on LinkedIn, connect with him, follow him. And what a great episode. Thanks, Monty, so much. Allison, you want to take us home?
Absolutely. Yeah, you are the full Monty, by the by. And we really admire and appreciate you. And we appreciate you listening to the podcast and sharing it with your tribe. And for anybody listening, if you haven't already, and there are many of you who listen but haven't subscribed yet, please do that. It means the world to us. If you like the show, please leave a review and feel free to share this and tell a friend, because, you know, this is a big industry and we want to help strengthen it for generations. So it means the world to us for all of us to stick together. So thanks for listening. And everybody, keep manufacturing out loud, because we need you. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to MFG Out Loud with Ray Zaganto and Allison DeFore. You can subscribe and find show notes at mfgoutloud.com.